All right, so who's exhausted already this morning? Man, I mean, Dennis wore me out laughing, and then just singing our hearts out when with you. Who needs a nap? Does anybody want a nap? Good grief, what a program you guys put on. We're just thrilled to be here. Hey, we want to just recap a little bit, kind of where we're at. In terms of what Aaron and I would love to share, remember, hopefully what you took away from last night is that to get the things that you want inside of your marriage, so if that's laughter, deep connection, intimacy, I mean, what you name it, whatever it is you want, it really does require hearts to be open to each other. We have an adversary who every single day will work effortlessly, tirelessly to shut your hearts down. He wants to keep those hearts of ours closed down so that, one, we're disconnected from the Lord, but also disconnected from each other. Our hearts are going to open and close every day. We can get a look from our spouse. We can have an experience where we leave our house to shut down. We can get back open. I mean, just that's the way our hearts work. We just open and close. So hopefully you heard us saying that, you know, if we're going to fight to keep our hearts open, that really it means that we've got to create a home that feels like the safest place on earth. We've got to figure out how do we be safe with each other, because we're not always going to be that way. So we kind of shared on sort of a proactive way that when I value my wife, when I get her value, when I cherish her, boy, that keeps her heart open and hopefully mine. And then we've got to follow it up with behavior. What can I learn to do to really nourish her, to keep her heart open, my heart open? So did that make sense? Okay, so kind of where we want to shift and go at this point is to talk about really one of the things that will happen in every one of our homes, in all of our relationships, in every one of our marriage, in our marriage. Okay, this is going to happen over and over and over again. It's going to shut us down. Are we even on? Yes. Is that on the thing? Put that up. There we go. What do you think happens every day? Maybe not every day, but happens regularly within our relationship that keeps us shut down or that closes us down? It's one word. Can you think of what the word is? It starts with a C. Conflict, right? I mean, is that not what happened? I mean, that is one of the things that makes us feel the most unsafe. It's one of the biggest culprits that shut us down. So really where we want to go is to talk about how do we deal with conflict in such a way to get our hearts back open to each other so that we can manage conflict in a different way. The way that we're going to do this is to present something we call the reactive cycle. Love this verse, James 4:1, because James goes on to talk about what's really going on, what causes fights and quarrels amongst us. So basically he's saying, what is going on that's causing the arguments? And then again, he goes on to give an answer. Is it not the what? The desires that wage war within us. Well, what does that really mean? That's the piece that we want to unpack. We actually believe that there is something that drives every single one of our arguments that we will ever have. One thing. I never knew this. Oh, I wish that we had known this. We just didn't understand that this thing was going on. Instead, we'd make it about the issue, money, or, you know, so our finances, or kids, or sex, or communication, or you name the issue has nothing to do with what really drives conflict. So to kind of set this up, we want to share a story. One of the craziest conversations, I think, that we've ever had inside of our marriage, and it happened literally, two weeks?
2 weeks into our relationship. Into our marriage, actually. And it cracks me up that we continue to tell this story because, you know, you have those conversations you would never dream that you would be talking about it 20 years later. And so here we were newlyweds, married 2 weeks. Where's the couple that's been married 3? Who knows, you may have conversations 20 years from now about something you're talking about today. But here we are, 2 weeks, in our new little Denver Seminary apartment. Actually, it wasn't new, it was ancient.
It was very
new to
old.
Us. And laying in bed, and I just wanted to check in with Greg to kind of see how he was doing as a wife. Thought it was quite simple, a very simple question. I was just going to check in. I wanted to be doing well, and I just wanted to ask. So here we are laying there, and I said, hey, Greg, how am I doing as a wife? Simple, straightforward question.
Is there a guy in this room that hears that as a simple, straightforward question? Anybody? I mean, I see some of you beating up going, oh, man, you know, he's in trouble. So the simple question, how am I doing as a wife? Ladies, let me ask you, what should I have said in response to that question? Great. Wonderful. Awesome. I know I've heard all of them over the years because that's not quite what I went with. As a matter of fact, what I chose as my response that I thought was good, I've ended up learning over the years that that's actually more of a swear word to a woman. When a woman hears this guy's out of her mouth, it really hits them hard. Ladies, can you imagine what this word is that I said in response to her question? Fine. How do they always know? How do you know this? Guys, did you realize that this is like the original F word? Okay, did you? It is it not? I had no idea. Because instantly I got this reaction from her. She didn't quite like that response.
Yeah, and I didn't really know at that point. We'd only been married 2 weeks. Fine was not a bad word before I got married. Married, fine is not good. And really, I heard the definition of it. Do you know the definition of fine? Feelings inside, not expressed. Fine. So here he is, we're laying there, and fine, what does that mean? There's more in there. There's feelings inside, not expressed. There's more to his response, and I'm not getting it.
There's not. Guys, is there more in there? There's really not. As a matter of fact, okay, one of the greatest moments of our 20-year marriage happened not too long ago when my wife, who loves to do research and read studies, found something that has changed my life. Why don't you share what you've heard?
Yes, what I read, and I love to do research, especially like physiology and the brain, and I read that guys, that there are times that they actually think about nothing. That there is.
See? You're welcome, all right? I've changed your life. It's true. There's nothing going on. There's moments.
The times that he's
you
staring
were wrong.
Off into space, sometimes drooling, sometimes not.
Whatever,
you know,
blissfully.
There's really, I'll say, what are you thinking about? You know, because for as women, we're thinking deep. We're thinking about many different things. I mean, our brains go back and forth, right and left hemisphere. We never stop thinking. And there are times that there is absolutely nothing going on.
No brain activity registered whatsoever.
I had no idea. No clue.
I tried to tell
you. I was relieved, actually.
Do we not try to tell them? So she wasn't very excited about my response. And so Aaron had been a labor and delivery nurse for a number of years, and so she thought she had drilled down a little bit more to try to get some more information out. And so so as a nurse, she was taught that when a woman comes in pregnant, obviously in a lot of pain, you just don't ask, well, how much pain are you in, right? Because that could mean different things. Mm-hmm. So what do you imagine that they taught her to do when a woman, yes,
yeah.
Okay, scale of 1 to 10.
I thought it was a great idea. 0.
Clearly.
You know, no pain at work. 10, you're in a lot of pain. This situation, 0, I'm a horrible wife. 10, I'm the best wife. You know, give me a grade. Scale
give me a grade. Oh, Lord. I mean, guys, come on. I mean, I'm sinking here, all right? So I'm thinking, oh, I don't want to play this game. I said, hey, let's turn off the lights. Let me show you how good a job you're doing. And she goes, you're not touching me until you pick a number. I was like, ah. And so let me ask you, what should I have said to her really quick? 10, 11,
yes,
12 probably. Yes, those are all really good ideas. But unfortunately, because I'm an idiot, that's not quite what I went with. As a matter of fact, I thought that we were young enough to where I thought she was asking for feedback. So I'm thinking, oh, all right, you know, I'll give you feedback. And so I began to think about my number.
But you didn't just think about it. I was laying on the other side of the bed, and I can hear him subtracting and adding. I'm like, really?
I was thinking out loud. You know, okay, do that.
Jesus is the perfect 10, and she's not Jesus, so I'm going to take off 0.3 for that. And I'm like, just answer the question.
Yeah. Well, I did, and unfortunately, it didn't go real well. Because I thought I came up with a perfect number, you know, not a 10, because give her a little bit of room to work, because we're young. Just saying, okay? So I came up with, all right, now don't judge me, all right? I'm just saying, all right? But I thought this was good, so I said, honey, I'm proud to tell you that you are a 9.3. Yeah, pretty good. Don't say that out loud. I'm telling you right now, okay? Because that was about the response that I got, was just this blank stare at me. And then she started to cry. I was thinking, hey, hold on. I said, whoa. I said, no, this is a good thing. That's a great number. You know, I'm a professor. That's like that's a 93%. That's an A, okay? A minus maybe, but it's still an A, all right? Oh, boy. And let me just tell you, we ended up spending a whole lot of time discussing my number, okay? So we want to break this down. What on earth happened from that point on? Something happened when I rated her that. Tell you what, it did something. And here's what we believe happens. Okay, what actually drives every conflict that you will ever have is the fact that you get your buttons pushed. You know that expression? I think Dennis even used it last night, sort of the hot buttons, right? I mean, buttons are things that, you know, it might be a sensitive area, a sore spot. It could be a pet peeve. It might be, you know, an unfulfilled expectation, or it could be, you know, a deeper emotional wound, an old wound or something. I mean, we all have these things. We all have buttons. Did you know that? All of us have buttons that will get triggered probably every day. Do you ever follow someone, speaking of a pet peeve, do you ever follow someone who's going below the speed limit? I mean, is that drive you nuts? I'm like, at least go the speed limit. You know, if it's 55, you know, at least go 75. I mean, that seems, right? I mean, that always hits me. That triggers buttons. So that night, what happened, the moment that Aaron started to cry and get upset at my number, see, it pushed a button. For me, the understanding, though, is buttons are nothing more than deeper emotions. That's really what a button is. They're just deeper emotions, these sensitive emotions that we have. We all have them. Okay, for me, the biggest one, as you see on that screen, is that top one that says failure. I hate to feel like I'm failing at anything. Anybody else hate to feel like you're failing, you're a failure? Ugh, hate that. I hate to make a mistake. I hate to not do something right. You know, if Aaron will come up to me and say, you know what, hey, we got to talk about something later on. I instantly hear that as I have screwed up as a husband and I'm in trouble. And instantly that button gets triggered. She might be wanting to talk to me about something about the house or one of the kids. I mean, it doesn't matter, but that's where I go with it. That is such a sensitive button for me. It could be, you guys talked about disrespect last night. That can be a button for others. Feeling unloved, feeling not good enough, that we don't measure up, feeling worthless, devalued, feeling abandoned, rejected. I mean, there's a lot of deeper emotions. And when those buttons get triggered, we don't like how that feels, and we will do things to get rid of that feeling. As a matter of fact, what happens is that we end up reacting. When my buttons get triggered, there's an instant kind of knee-jerk reaction. You know what I'm talking about? We don't think about this. It's not that I planned to do these things. It just ends up happening.
Because we don't like that button being pushed. It's a sensitive area. Typically, there's history to that button. There's something that happened maybe growing up with a coach, with a teacher, with a boss. I mean, something has happened that has made that area very sensitive. Therefore, when it gets pushed, it's like when you go to the doctor and they hit your knee with a little hammer and your knee jerks out, like Greg said, you just react because you want it to stop. The unfortunate thing is when these buttons get pushed and we react, it does nothing good. Because typically those reactions are not pretty. They're not pretty, they're not honoring to our integrity, to our spouse. And then what happens when we react, it taps into the button again. So it goes round, button gets pushed, reaction, button gets pushed, reaction, and it keeps us stuck in this cycle, and we go round and round and round. And that's what typically goes on within a relationship, within a marriage, any relationship, really. And that's what was going on for us the first couple years of our relationship. This brought more insight into what was really going on and more hope that there was a different way to do it.
Yeah, every reaction is either going to be a fight or a flight. Either you're going to go toe-to-toe and try to argue and debate and get upset and convince the other person that I'm really not a failure, that I didn't do anything wrong, that you're just misunderstanding, misportraying me, or you're going to get away and flight. You're going to shut down and withdraw and disconnect. How many of you would say that you're more fighters when your button gets pushed? As coaches, I would imagine a lot of hands would go up, right? Yeah, I mean, that was our problem, is that we're both fighters. So that makes our marriage so fun when we get our buttons pushed. Because it's not that we back down. I mean, we'll go toe-to-toe. We do that a little bit differently, but we want to convince. See, I want to debate. As a matter of fact, what I start to do is my classic go-to move, reaction-wise, is to defend myself. Do any other defenders in the room? Okay, I want to explain to her. I want her to understand that, no, you got it wrong. You're misunderstanding. You misperceived this. That's not what actually happened. My hope is that if I can explain it to her, show her what, just give her the insight that she's clearly lacking, that if I can help her to understand, that she'll go, oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, cool. We're fine. No fights. That's actually never happened once. But I'm hopeful, okay? Maybe the next 20 years, maybe that will happen. Okay? But some of you are going to withdraw, and you're going to shut down, and you're going to disconnect, and you're going to stuff how you're feeling. Okay, either way, though, we're going to react in some way. And as Aaron said, when we react, okay, that then triggers that other person's buttons.
Mm-hmm. And several of my buttons are being invalidated, being judged. And a big one is that the last one on there is don't measure up. And that laying in bed that night when he said 9.3, well, that just stepped right on that don't measure up, not good enough. Because I was one of those students in school that nothing beyond a 98% and above was acceptable. So it should have been a 9.8, and I would have been thrilled. And so it was that.
As a matter of fact, to give you a little bit more insight in what she's saying, okay, I didn't know that she had buttons. I didn't know I had buttons. I clearly didn't know she had this don't measure up or not good enough button. When she says that as a perfectionist, okay, let me tell you, she graduated high school with a 4.3 GPA. When she first told me that, I went, I don't think that's even possible. Said, I wouldn't know this, but I think the highest is a 4.0. And she's like, oh, no. She goes, you can take honors classes and get even a higher grade. And I went, well, what kind of classes? Because no one ever invited me into honors classes, all right? I always wondered where you smart kids went throughout the day. You know, I just took the little bus to school, and I was just happy to be there, okay? I was a solid C student. Any solid C students? All right, see? But, man, that was how much of a perfectionist, how hard she worked to do that. I just had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily either. And today a 9.3 would be thrilling, but back then
You were a 13.
Thank you. I love our kids hear us tell this story. And they'll remind me constantly, Mom, you're a 9.3. So I appreciate the reinforcement that comes through our children.
Yeah. Could kill them. Anyway.
Anyway. So these buttons were there when I came into marriage. They were with me. The history was there from school, so don't measure up. But when those buttons get pushed, then I react. And typically, the amazing thing is that you definitely are aware of what your spouse's reactions are, because that's what you see. Like when Greg says he defends himself, I can tell you it's very consistent.
Thank you.
It is very consistent. And typically what I do when my button gets pushed, I react because I don't like it. So I go into criticize mode. I'll be, you know, well, 9.3, what kind of number is that? You know, and I just take it and I try to increase the energy just to let him know how much I do not like what is going on. And so I'll escalate a little bit.
What's that? Nothing.
And, you know, throw a little anger in there. And then my favorite is to catastrophize the situation. Do you know what to catastrophize means? Take it to the nth degree, to the farthest end of the earth, that this is the worst experience of my whole life. We better go and find the top not marriage counselor, to help us with this because we are never going to find our way, just to completely catastrophize it. And then if that, you know, if all these things don't work to really get his attention, then I withdraw. And I just kind of say, okay, whatever.
I'm not exactly sure how this conflict that night ended, but I think it sort of ended when she says, she goes, well, I may be a 9.3, but at least I'm not a 5 like you are. But see, I'm a C student, so that was actually felt very normal. I was like, I can live with that, so.
And once again, when your buttons are pushed and you react, you say things like that. That, you know, with the times that you say things and you think, where did that just come from? I'm not even capable of saying something like that. But when your buttons are pushed, there's lots of things that can come out.
Does this make sense? Can you see this cycle? I'm telling you, it's universal. Okay, yours may look very different than ours. You may be a flighter that's married to a flighter. And so you're like, well, we're not like those two, you know.
How many of you are married to a fighter? You're a fighter and you're married to a fighter.
All right, yeah.
Spicy.
Spicy. Yeah.
You might want to give them plenty of room. Notice who it is as they walk out of here today, just in case there's something going on. That's how we are. It's like the typical Italian family. It's very energetic in our discussions.
Mm-hmm. What about two flighters? Are there two flighters that are married to each other? Yeah. See, they're always so shy. They're like, you know. Okay, and again, so it doesn't matter. It just, the fact is we get our buttons pushed. We're going to react. Part of our hope for you is that in your little notes that the exercise you'll do a little bit later is you're going to kind of map out what does your dance look like? What does your cycle look like? We all do this. This was, again, as Aaron said, a real moment of change for us when we went, oh, so that's what's going on. Okay. Because where we want to go from here is, okay, what do we do? Instead of reacting to each other, is there another way? But before we go there, we do, again, understand. So every conflict happens because your button gets pushed, but you stay cycling because of those reactions. So can we do this a little bit differently? However, though, there's something about this cycle that really is damaging.
Because when our buttons get pushed and we react, it actually sets us up as adversaries. So we're no longer one, as we were created to be in marriage, we're adversarial. We're on opposite sides of the court. And when we're adversarial, our hearts shut down, we feel unsafe, hearts close, and we disconnect. And ultimately, then we don't get what we want out of this relationship. We're adversarial, we don't feel safe, our hearts close down, and then we don't get what we want. Intimacy isn't there.
Yeah, and that's why if this cycle remains and people don't know how do we get our hearts back open, you know, how do we deal with this, as the scriptures say, again, divorce happens because of the hardness of our hearts. Ultimately, this cycle kills relationships because we are just hardened to each other. So the question then becomes, so what do we do? I mean, let's make this practical, right? We all get our buttons pushed. So what do we do when someone pushes our button? So the next time you get a button triggered, are there some things? We do think that there are. But first, we're going to show you what... Bless you. First, we're going to show you... Push my button, actually. Okay, first we're going to show you what not to do. So we want to give you one more kind of visual of what this does, and we're going to show you a video of two women, right?
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite video clips ever, because it's two women in a parking lot whose buttons clearly get pushed, and they do not do what you should do. They just go with it, and it is hilarious.
Yeah, so don't do this.
Excuse me. I know you didn't think anyone would catch you, but you just slammed your door into my car. The least you can do is say you're sorry, lady.
You don't have to take that tone. It's not like I'm hurting your resale value.
I'm sorry. See? Like that.
Did you hear what she said, that very last snippet? I don't know what happened. And that is exactly what happens when our buttons get pushed. We react, hopefully not like that. Don't you love the Christmas music playing in the background the whole time? You know, and as women, we know around Christmas time, the mall parking lot can be quite violent. Hopefully you've never been involved in an altercation like that. But it is, I don't know what happened. Things just knee-jerk. They just, you go with it. And typically, it is not God-honoring or pretty or have integrity at all, just like that.
Yeah, so is that our destiny within relationships, to get our buttons pushed and then react like we just saw? Or is there another way that we can do this? And what's so cool is it's right there in the scriptures. It's right there in Matthew. You guys know this passage, right? Why do you look at the dust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the what? To the plank, to the log in your own eye. Okay, notice that it now gives an order. Do you see where it says first? What does it say to do? First, take the log out of your own eye. Then you can see clearly to remove the dust from your brother's eye. See, there's the answer right there. When our buttons get pushed, what we're being told to do is to first deal with us. Instead of trying to have a conversation with her, worrying about what she's doing, trying to change her, which I tried for many, many years. It doesn't work, actually. Because aren't we taught this? We're taught that when we're in a conflict that we need to hang in there and we need to figure out a way to kind of communicate through this, right? Isn't that the advice that we often get? Don't let the sun go down on your what? Yeah, so as couples, what have we taken that to mean? So when you argue late at night, what are you supposed to do? Right, because you can't let the sun go down. Man, I'm shaking her awake. I'm giving her five-hour energy drinks just to keep her awake so we can talk this stuff through. The worst piece of advice that we can ever give someone is that when we get into an argument, the worst thing that we can do is to try to talk through this. Because when your buttons are pushed, what do you imagine happens to your heart? Yeah, does it stay open or do you think it closes down? Okay, what is that little, you know those little bugs? You always talk about this.
Oh, the little, I don't know what they call them in this area in the South, but we call them roly-polies. Or what's the other?
Pill bugs, sow bugs,
potato bugs. Have you ever known one little bug that has more names? Because there's actually like a technical name for it as well. But when you see those little bugs, if you touch it or flick it, what happens to them? Rolls up into a tight ball. That is exactly what our heart does when we have these emotional flicks. When the buttons get pushed, our heart goes into that tight ball. And then that sow bug, the pill bug, the potato bug, whatever, roly-poly, when does it finally open up again? When it feels safe. And so that's exactly what we're talking about, feeling emotionally safe. Our hearts then open up again, just like that bug. So we get flicked, it goes into a tight ball, and when we feel safe, it opens up again.
So all we're saying is that when we get our buttons pushed and we close down, the worst thing that we can do is to try to have this conversation. It says, first, we've got to deal with us. So how do we then do that? So we're going to give you three steps that we believe can really make a difference when our hearts are closed. Mm-hmm. Oh, and actually,
Your goal then is to deal with you first. like Greg is saying, that's straight out of the scripture. It's personal responsibility. First, deal with you. Get your heart open so then instead of a reaction, a closed-hearted reaction, you can have an open-hearted response, a loving, open-hearted. An open-hearted response has God's love flowing through, because when our hearts are closed, God's love is cut off. It's not flowing through you. So first deal with you, then you can respond to your spouse.
Does that make sense? Okay, so number one. So the first thing that we would encourage you to do is when your buttons get triggered is to take sort of a time out. Hit the pause button. How many of you, again, are the fighters? Let me see your hands again. This is the step, really, for us. We need to star. Because this is so important for us, because our tendencies, I want to convince you and pursue you and get you to understand and make you do the things that I want and whatever it is, and it's never a good thought or a good idea. So we need to call that time out. What we're trying to do inside this time out is we're just trying to bring those emotions down, just to de-escalate. Okay, when one of your players does something, I mean, you know what it feels like just to want to kill them or to yell at them. We just need to call that time out, just a moment to kind of let those emotions calm down. Here's a good example of why this is so important. I'm going to show you a video clip from the movie Anchorman, okay? This one guy is very upset. He had a pet dog. He was driving the car. He was eating some food, threw it out the window, hit a biker. The biker spills and comes after this guy and ends up taking his little dog and kicks him over the side of a bridge. It's very sad, I know, which would upset all of us. So look what happens, though, when our buttons get triggered if we don't know what to do to sort of get us calmed down. Watch this.
Fantana. Ah! Ron, are you okay?
The man put it back, sir.
Calm down. Breathe, Ron. Breathe.
The man, that's from the motorcycle.
What did the bad man do, Ron?
The motorcycle on the bridge. I hit him with a burrito.
Ron.
He took him with his foot, and he kicked him. That's what he did.
Someone punted him?
No, wait. Let me say something.
What? I didn't understand a one word you said.
Ron, are you okay? Ron.
Ron, where are you?
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Do you ever feel that way, that you're stuck in this glass case of emotion, okay? I mean, that's what it can happen. We can get that worked up. Did you notice his friend was all, breathe, Ron, breathe. Okay, that's actually not a bad idea. We've got to do something in that moment when we step away. So if I call a timeout, okay, I need to do something that's going to calm me down. Maybe it is taking some deep breaths. Okay, maybe it's spending some time with the Lord in prayer. Maybe it's listening to one of Gwen's CDs and some praise and worship music. You know, maybe it's going for a walk. Maybe it's exercising. You see what I'm saying, right? We all know to do things just to get us just calm down. And this is so important. Oh, there. I've forgotten to advance it. It says in Proverbs 29:11, I love this verse, a fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man does what? Keeps himself under, control. Instead of reacting, I do have an opportunity. I do have a choice. I can either react to her or I can say, you know what, Aaron? Right now, I'm not at a place that I can really listen to you. I love you. I want to hear you, but I'm not there. Let me go away for a little bit. Basically, you're saying, let me get back open, and then I'll come back to that conversation. Okay, that's what Matthew's talking about, getting the log out of our own eye. Does that make sense? Okay. How long maybe you stay in timeout? Is anybody wondering that? Okay. My kids always tease me, you got to send dad in a timeout. I'm like, if only. I would love to be sent to my room with none of you around, you know. ESPN is calling me. You know, how long do we stay in timeout? The research says about 20 minutes is what it takes to get your heart rate back down after your buttons have really been triggered. It may take longer than that. It may take a day. I don't know. I mean, you just keep checking in with each other. But the key is, though, well, I need to do something to begin to get my heart open, and that's why that first step is so important. Now, what do we do inside the timeout?
Mm-hmm. So this is step two, because typically when what I used to do is I'd go into my timeout and hit the pause button, and off I'd go, and I'd sit there and I'd ruminate or just replay over and over what he did wrong, and he said this, and why did he say that, and that keeps you stirred up. And again, our goal is to de-escalate and to calm down. So step two is to name what you are feeling, because it's how can you name or even begin to understand or manage your emotions when there's just all this confusion? Because when our hearts close down, we're not thinking clearly. So we want to de-escalate and really begin to kind of decipher through what happened, what's going on, what am I feeling, what is my heart saying. And so we want to encourage you to begin to manage your emotions and to honor your emotions. So typically, what do we do when we feel something, when we get stirred up? You know, I know personally, you know, deny it, stuff it. Oh, I'm not feeling like that. That's not a godly way to feel as a woman. You know, I'm angry, I'm disappointed, I'm just stirred up. So typically, we will deny stuff, ignore, not even acknowledge that we're feeling anything. And that's the opposite of what we want you to do here.
Yeah, and when we do that, when we ignore our feelings, when we stuff them, pretend they don't exist, bad things can happen. Here's a video clip from the movie Talladega Nights, okay? And here what you're going to see is a guy is denying, okay, something. And watch what happens when we deny something. We end up doing some really bad things. Watch this.
The doctor told us that we should let you work it out in your own sweet time, but Ricky, you can walk.
What'd you just say?
He's telling you the truth, man. It's all in your head.
You sick sons of... I mean, you walk in that door on your two legs all fat and cocky and looking at me in my chair, and you tell me it's all in my head? I hope that both of you have sons. Handsome, beautiful, articulate sons who are talented and star athletes, and they have their legs taken away. I mean, I pray you know that pain and that hurt.
Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. Don't you put that on us. You are not paralyzed.
I am so paralyzed.
No, no, no.
Rough on him now.
No, he needs to know.
Okay.
He's always crying.
Tough love it is, tough love. Wake up, idiot.
You want to know what I am? You want to see what my life is?
Don't do it.
Do you want to see what's going on here?
Don't you stick that knife in your leg.
Ah!
Don't touch it.
Can he feel it?
Yeah. We'll use this knife to pry it out. We'll pull it out.
There we go. Two.
No, 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 no. Just don't think about it.
We're going down a bad path.
Cut around the meat. Okay.
Just stretch it out.
They gotta plug it.
Whoa.
Right
there.
It's like a deer.
We gotta wiggle it just a little bit. You feel that?
Feel that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You are back.
I love you guys.
See what happens when you deny something? You can end up doing bad things, like sticking knives in your leg. We're just saying, okay? But emotionally, though, we do this. We often ignore and minimize and marginalize our emotions.
Yep, we do, don't we? Hopefully not like that. But I love Psalm 4:4. In your anger, do not sin. When you're on your bed, search your hearts and be silent. So in your timeout, when you hit the pause button, when you're separated, when you're by yourself, search your hearts and be silent. And you can even ask the Lord, Lord, show me what is it exactly, what button has been pushed here. Like we said, those buttons are underlying emotions. There's something going on here. Give me insight. Give me wisdom. What is it that I'm feeling? And then you can just simply treat your feelings as information. And that's all it is. It's like the dashboard of your car. A warning light goes off. You know, typically for me, it's my gas light or the oil needs to be changed. And it's just information. Something is needed for this engine to run. Same thing when our hearts are the voice of our hearts, our feelings. And it's just information that something is going on inside your heart. Nothing more, Nothing must. It's just information. Doesn't mean you're going to act on it. Doesn't make it right or wrong. It's just simply a feeling. God gave them to us just as information. And then lastly, name the specific feeling out loud. I am feeling really disturbed by that video clip that you just played. No, and so you just want to name, put words to it. And actually, I knew that this was very powerful in my own life, that it really would help me calm down once I would name the right one. I'd go through several, you know, is it this? Is it that? Is it invalidated? You know, is it not good enough? What is it? And as soon as I would hit the right one, I could just feel my body de-escalate. And there's actual research around that that shows that when you name it, when you say it out loud, it takes your brain activity from the amygdala, which is the hyperactivity emotional center, to a much calmer area of the brain, to the prefrontal cortex. And this actually physiologically causes your body to calm down. I've seen this with my kids when they come in all stirred up that, you know, Garrison hit me and this and that, that, you know, their fists will be clenched, and I'll encourage them to really say, what are you feeling? You know, are you feeling this? Are you? And once they say, I'm feeling really disrespected, it happens. It just calms them down. So we want to encourage you as well to do that.
Does that make sense? So we, step one is what? Yeah, so when your buttons get triggered, just kind of hit the pause, call it a quick timeout. Okay, when you're there in timeout, what are you actually doing? All we're saying is just put a name to how you're feeling. And as Aaron's saying, that really does calm people down. We've seen that over and over and over again. Which leads us then to step number three. I don't know how people who don't know the Lord ultimately manage their emotions. Because here's the problem, is that somewhere we have to now figure out, based on how we're feeling, what is actually the truth. Because the reality, and Aaron talked a little bit about this, when our buttons get pushed and we shut down, see, what happens is that, like that little roly-poly bug, we just lack perspective. We lack awareness. We lack understanding. We become clouded. There's a great verse that says, they are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God. Because why? Because of the ignorance that is due because of the hardening of their hearts. When our hearts shut down, we just have to understand that you lose perspective. I'm now operating on my own assumptions, my own stuff, and I probably lacked what God's wisdom is. And that's why it's so important that when I'm in that timeout and I go, okay, right now I'm feeling like a failure. I believe that Aaron has been doing this and it's just making me feel this way, but God, is that actually the truth? What is really going on? What we're trying to do is, and we have to keep in mind that feelings don't necessarily equal what? Yeah, just because I feel something, that doesn't make it true. I want to honor my emotions, but then I want to take those things and figure out, okay, God, what is actually the truth here? Because the reality is, guys, remember, we have an adversary. And part of what he will do in these moments is that he will begin to exaggerate your thoughts and your thinking about your spouse. Have you ever noticed that? I remember one time Aaron was gone for an evening out with some girlfriends. She came home about 10 o'clock at night. I'm actually sitting on the kitchen table working on a book that I have coming out called Fight Your Way to a Better Marriage. So I'm smack in the middle of this book on marriage. She walks in from this night with the girlfriends, and she walks by, it's kind of kitchen's right there, she walks by the sink and goes, oh, because there's a bunch of dirty dishes right in the sink. And she just made one comment. She's like, what am I, the maid? And then she just quietly kind of just got stuff up, and it was not a real big deal. But I tell you, the big deal is what went on in here. I sat at the table watching all this, and instantly I was flooded with a whole bunch of thoughts. Does that ever happen to you guys? Because I sat there and went, the nerve. She was just out with her friends. She literally comes in. The first thing that she does is just notice the kitchen, notice the sink, notice the dirty dishes. Did she even say hello? Did she not see me sitting here working? I'm working on a book to bring money for our family. Did she even say anything about that? No. Did she even ask how my evening went? Because I would have told her. The kids were horrible. Okay, Annie spilled something in the thing, and I had to clean the carpet, I had to clean it up. Garrison did this, and Taylor did that. No, she didn't care about anything. All she cares about are stupid little, precious little clean dishes, and whether or not that I did those or not. And I literally started just going on and on. Does that ever happen to you? Guys, that is Satan. What he does is he takes the thoughts that we begin to have and he begins to exaggerate them. He wants to get us having just rolling out with these thoughts because he wants us so shut down. I'm convinced that as we go through these things, that's just not us alone. We have an enemy, a sworn enemy, that wants you to see your spouse in as negative light as you possibly can. The problem is this stuff has some sort of basis of truth, and it sort of sounds right, doesn't it? And yet it goes to that nth degree. And that's the times where I need to say, you know what, God, what is going on? Is that true about her? Is that who she really is? And as I sat there, and I did, and I just noticed it and kind of went, no, wait. I just remember in my mind saying, God, what is going on here? Is this really true? Is this how my wife is? Is she this uncaring and this selfish, you know, whatever? And it led me to go, I don't think that's who she is. And I said, hey, Aaron, I said, that comment you just made, I mean, are you really that upset? And she's like, no. I said, because, you know, I told her everything that was going on. She's like, Greg, I didn't mean that to you. I was talking about our kids. I was like, oh, okay, thank you. The point is that we've got to pursue the truth in those moments. My thoughts, what someone says about me. So let's say Aaron notices that I didn't take the trash out that morning, and she believes that I'm taking advantage of her and not loving her. You know, comes to me and says, I'm just tired of the way that you're taking advantage of me. You think this is all my job to do all of this stuff around the house? I have a choice in that moment. I can either believe what she says simply because she says it, or I can again go off and go to the Lord and say, God, right now in this moment, my wife thinks that I'm taking advantage of her. That's who I am. Is that the truth? I remember one time I said to Aaron, I told her, honey, from now on, when you come and share something to me, I do want to listen, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to go off and I'm going to start praying about what you say, how you feel, and then I'm going to come back. I tell you, it's been one of the greatest freeing things I've ever done in my life, because what it helped me realize is that she is not the author of truth. Her feelings are her feelings, but that doesn't make it true about me. Does that make sense? We have our own stuff wrapped up in our feelings, don't we? Okay, a lot of times we have, you know, there's ways that we contribute to how we feel based on our expectations and about our family of origin, the way we grew up, stuff that happened to us that may have nothing to do with what she did to me. And that's why I need to go to the Lord and help. The Lord needs to help me factor out what's my stuff or what's her stuff versus what is he maybe trying to teach me in this moment. I believe that every time she comes to me to talk to me about something, that God can use her, right? God can use her to speak truth in my life, right? I hate it when it happens, but it's possible, right? That's my assumption. But just because she says it or feels it doesn't make it true. And I want to go to my Heavenly Father, who is, by the way, the author of truth, is he not? I want to ask God to reveal in this moment, whatever's going on, Lord, show me what the truth is. I love this verse in John 16:13. But then when he, the Spirit of truth, comes, he will guide us into what? All truth. It's not some truth. See, that's the guarantee. When I go to God and say, Lord, in this moment, help me to understand what's true, he's faithful. And you will know the truth, right? And the truth will what? Yeah. What do you think in that moment gets set free? What is being freed in that moment when we seek him in this situation? Our what? Our mind, and probably more importantly, our what? Our heart. See, his truth sets our mind and heart free. See, now we're open. Remember that verse in Matthew that says, first deal with you, right? Do you notice how it says then? So I need to first get my heart back open, create some space, figure out how I'm really feeling, take that stuff to the Lord. Now I'm ready to go to her and have that kind of conversation that we need to have. And that's what we'll talk about tonight. Okay, so now once our hearts are open, we still have an issue here. We still have something that's going on that we need to talk through. So now how do we do that in a way that keeps our hearts open even as we begin to discuss that? Does this make sense at all?
Yeah.
All right. So this afternoon, you're going to have a chance to kind of map out your own cycle. What does that look like? And then tonight, we're going to show you, how do we have that kind of healthy conversation that's God-centered, that's honoring, that keeps hearts open? And we'll do that here in just a little bit. So again, create some space, then do what? Yeah, name how you're feeling to then ultimately do what? Yeah, figure out what the truth. That is the key. Lord, we thank you for your truth. We thank you that your truth will always set our hearts free, will always set our minds free. Lord, we acknowledge that we do have an adversary, and every time that we argue and fight as a couple, we have an enemy who's going to participate, loves it when we shut down, loves it when we're fighting. He doesn't want us restored. So, Lord, we acknowledge that. Lord, open our eyes to that reality. She is not my enemy. She's my wife. She's my teammate. Lord, help us to deal with when our buttons get pushed. Give us the strength to call the timeout. Lord, give us the awareness and the insights to understand how we're feeling. And Lord, through your truth, give us the power to get our hearts back open. We just ask these things in your precious name. Amen.